The letter arrived the second Tuesday in November. Standing in the narrow vestibule of her West Chelsea brownstone, Clara Burke unlocked the creaky brass door to her mailbox and reached inside. There, among a pile of bills and flyers, was a single ivory envelope. She stepped into her parlor floor apartment, slung her messenger bag off her shoulder. Still holding the mail, she removed her notebook and camera and placed them on the kitchen table. Three cats, Blackburn, Olive, and Chat, all named for passerines they would most certainly kill if they had the chance, darted around her feet as she opened the refrigerator door and filled their bowls. Setting the bills aside, Claire turned to the envelope. In a world of email, it stood out for being personal, an actual letter. People didn't write each other anymore, and she felt instantly curious. She saw the name in the return address, and her breath caught. Rasmussen was written in a tiny, sharp hand above the address. P.O. Box 1041, Millinocket, Maine. The handwriting was not her sister's. Claire turned over the envelope and saw the Burke crest stamped in blue sealing wax. Their parents had given the sisters family crest rings on their 20th birthdays, and the seal had been imprinted with Anne's. Claire walked into the living room, trying to keep her hands steady. She opened the letter and started to read.
Dear Aunt Claire, we don't know each other really, but I'm planning a trip to New York, and I wondered if we could meet. I'll be doing research for a project. I read your Institute for Avian Studies blog and look at your photos. I especially love the one of the snowy owl. I didn't know they wintered on city beaches. This letter must seem really out of the blue. It is for me, too. I didn't plan on writing it, but then this opportunity came up, and I thought, who do I know in the city? This is not a trick to get revenge for my father or something. Please do not be worried about that. Just so you know, I'm a serious person. I'm in my senior year at Emerson College in the documentary production program. I am inspired by nature and am working on a project that combines sculpture and film. I have something underway, and I want to visit New York to film a certain habitat. I know you spend a lot of time in the parks and at the beach and are very busy. From your blog, it seems you watch birds all over the city. I'm sure you know the place I'm interested in, and I'd love to tell you about it when I see you. It's funny, I haven't been to New York City since I was in third grade. My father had an exhibit and we drove in and stayed for a few days. While he was setting up the show, my mother took Gilly and me to the Met. She showed us lots of her favorite paintings, but there was one in particular she said you and she used to love. It was by Winslow Homer, and there was moonlight. I remember she looked happy and sad staring at it, both at the same time. This might seem presumptuous, but I was wondering if I could stay with you a few days while I work on my project. I know the address, of course, from family history. Your number is unlisted, so I can't call. I plan to show up at 495 West 22nd Street and hope for the best. Love, Grit. The letter felt real in her hands, but nothing else did. The day's last light spilled through French doors, burnishing the oak floor and washing the books that fill the tall bookcases with gold. In the small park across 22nd Street, bright yellow ginkgo leaves glinted on dark branches. She hadn't had contact with anyone in her family for nearly two decades. Claire felt as though she were dreaming. Bowls rattled in the kitchen, the cats finishing their dinner. Old radiators clinked and hissed as Claire turned on a lamp and sat on the couch. Love, Grit. Claire had assumed Gillis and Grit had been raised to hate her. The part about not wanting revenge, did that mean forgiveness? Love. What a peculiar way to sign a first letter. Or maybe it was not strange at all. Claire seemed to have lost all perspective. Somewhere in the apartment, probably in a box at the back of her closet, Claire had the picture she'd taken the day she'd attacked Frederick. Anne, Gillis, and Grit huddled together by the dying fire, all looking shell-shocked. Claire's lawyer had offered the photo at trial, an exhibit to show Claire's state of mind, immediate concern for her sister's life, and Anne's affect, beaten down, fearful, hoping to convince the jury that Anne was being abused and that Claire had attacked Frederick to defend her. 18 years had passed, two of them in prison. Now Grit was 21, a college senior. Any moment the doorbell would ring, and a young woman would be standing there. She would be just 5 years younger than Anne when she'd married Frederick and estranged herself from her family. Claire had a sudden, crazy desire to talk to Anne. In spite of everything, even in prison, the need for her sister had never gone away. She remembered their old pre-Frederick ease, the way they'd check in constantly no matter where they were, just to talk, remind each other to watch for the full moon, tell each other what they were having for dinner. In spite of not being cooks, they loved food. They fought, but they always laughed. Before and during the trial, Claire had been barred contact with Anne. After the verdict, Frederick sold the Montauk house and moved the family away. Claire couldn't stop herself from hoping Anne would write or even visit, but it never happened. Sarah had heard from Anne during the first couple of years after Claire's conviction and told her they were living in Newburyport, Massachusetts. But then the family moved to Denmark and Sarah never heard from Anne again. After closing arguments, the jury had been instructed to consider charges of attempted murder as well as the lesser charges of various degrees of felony assault. 6 hours later, they returned with a verdict for assault. Although the first police officer on the scene hadn't insisted Anne take off the scarf she wore to hide Frederick's handprints on her neck, one forensic technician had taken a picture of Anne with the scarf on, and Mary McLaughlin had presented it at trial. When the trial was over, the foreman told reporters the jury had seen redness and swelling in the photo. They had debated finding Claire not guilty, but couldn't completely discount Anne's and Frederick's testimony. Still, they found that Claire had truly believed she was protecting her sister, and they considered her state of mind to be a mitigating circumstance. Instead of 15 to 25 for attempted murder, Judge Berman sentenced Claire to 2 to 4 years for a Class E assault. She was driven straight from court to Bedford Hills Correctional Facility, New York State's only maximum security prison for women.